And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and comic book nerds of all ages, welcome to another and long overdue episode of Nerdy Notions. I am your eternal host, the one, the only, and ever snarky Sasha Kaplan, and I'm joined today by my fabulous new co-host. You heard her last time when we discussed Black Widow. She's the one, she's equally snarky and just as fun, if not more fun than I am, Caitlin Moore.
Hey guys.
Oh my gosh, so what are we reviewing again?
It's Hawkeye this time.
Hawkeye has his own show?
Yeah, apparently he does. And that's one of the questions I will be asking is why.
Okay, because that was going to be my first question, which is why. But I guess everybody liked Hawkeye as a character. And unlike, you know, Captain America, who had like a lot of development over the course of several films, and unlike Black Widow, that also had some kind of character development over the course of several films that she was not the main character in, right?
Yeah.
The only real development that we got with Hawkeye was we found out he had a family in Ultron. And then we also found out that he, you know, his family disappears in the snap or the blip, whatever you want to call it. I find it weird they call it the blip. Why is it the blip?
That's a larger conversation that we can get into. The snap makes way more sense.
Right, because it's not like they didn't say, like, hey, by the way, like, I understand, like, the like, disintegration, but, like, why a blip?
Well, look, it's not like they can call it the dustening and have it taken seriously.
The great dusting.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, sure. Okay, so we'll get to that. And then we find him in as Ronin murdering some Yakuza in Endgame. It was an Endgame, right?
Yeah, it was an Endgame because he, as a character, Hawkeye is in the least amount of movies by far of any of the original Avengers. Like, even Black Widow got introduced in Iron Man 2, and I don't know about you, but I don't count that 5-second cameo in Thor where Hawkeye shows up.
That cameo, though, it was fun. It's like, this is the thing where I think the MCU in phase one was really good at introducing characters that we knew we were going to see in a very short time, right? Because like everything in phase one led to the Avengers movie, which is all of these characters that have been set up: Coulson, Maria Hill, Captain America, Iron Man, you know, Thor, obviously, Black Widow, Hawkeye, Nick Fury, uniting and, you know, being part of this big film. Whereas, like, not to get too much into, like, current MCU shenanigans, but, like, we don't really know, like, characters are introduced. Will we ever see them again? Will they ever be mentioned again? It's kind of 50-50. But we'll talk about why I brought this up for Hawkeye specifically. And it's not because I kind of want to riff on the MCU, because that's kind of what I've been doing, like, the last, since y'all last heard us. But we also really riffed on Black Widow, so.
Yeah, so. That actually gets into one of the other things, like, how is Hawkeye as a character, and does the show finally kind of make him more interesting and give him the character development that we have so long been searching for?
Is that your first question?
That can be the first question, yes.
Okay, so, like, Hawkeye's not like, okay, he does get character development, like, but like lowercase, in the sense that, like, we do see the consequences of years of crime fighting and years of, like, the toll that takes on a human that is, you know, not super powered. So obviously that's gonna have some long-term effects for him.
To be fair, I'll give the MCU this. They've been pretty good at doing PTSD in their heroes in their movies. I think the best one is when they did, and I weird saying this for this movie, but Tony Stark in Iron Man 3, I think, was one of the best portrayals of what PTSD of and how it affects people. Hawkeye and does it well, but he also, if you watch the show, they kind of have this problem of assigning him personality traits because he was kind of a bland in the other movies. Like Kate Bishop, who's really the main character of the show, spends a
good time. She really didn't need to be in here, but we'll get to that.
She didn't. But she's the main character of the show, and she, one of the running jokes of all of this is that she keeps talking about his branding and how he's not memorable and how he keeps everything tight to his chest, and that's why he's been like that for all the movies that we've seen him in.
Well, hold on, hold on. I think before we get into all of this, we kind of have to recap the series a little bit. So people have, I think people need like a reminder. So the show doesn't actually start on Clint. It starts with this young girl named Kate Bishop, who was created by Alan Heinberg and Jim Chung and first appeared in Young Avengers number one, who was competent.
I'm totally excited about this.
Who was competent until a certain writer that shall remain nameless kind of ruined her. But, okay, so Kate is very different from her comic book counterpart, and it is not in a good way. The only thing she kind of still has in common with the Kate from the original Young Avengers run is that, like, they both have a bow and arrow. So Kate is this, like, college student, right, who screws up, destroys a bell tower on a dare. And she ends up coming home to New York for Christmas, a week before Christmas, which, like, I guess it was like the last day of the semester or something before everyone went home.
Yeah.
Did we
By the way, this is a Christmas show, everybody.
Yeah, and they'll remind you every second they can. Do we even know what college she's at?
No, I don't think so.
They never mention it?
I mean, unless she was, like, wearing a college sweatshirt in one scene that I just wasn't paying attention to, I have no idea.
No, I don't think she was. I think she was wearing her, like, archery team uniform.
Yeah.
But, okay, so she ends up, like, her mom is dating. Okay, so this is my quick story about the first time I watched Hawkeye. They introduce him as Jack Dunesk, and I'm like, this name sounds really familiar. Why does this name sound familiar? And so I quickly Googled it, and then it dawned on me. It's not Jack, it's Jacques, and he is the swordsman.
You couldn't tell that by all the swords in the show.
Well, here's the thing, like, I completely blanked, and this was before the swords were introduced. Once the swords were introduced, I'm like, okay, yeah, but I'm like it's one of those things, like, I think I was still, like, riding the heels of, like, Empire in certain cases, the comics. So, like, I couldn't quite, I was like, I know this name. Why do I know this name? Anyway, so she's, like, cranky that her mom is engaged to this guy. And oh, we should mention that Kate's connection to Hawkeye is that she was in New York living in a fancy schmancy penthouse because her parents are rich during the Chitauri invasion, and she saw Hawkeye like grappling from the rooftop, and she thought it was really cool. So in case it wasn't already obvious, she's a kind of a fangirl.
It's a different level than Kamala Khan in Miss Marvel, but it's definitely a point in this show. Oh, also her dad dies in the beginning.
Yeah, well, like with Kamala, I feel like it makes a little bit more sense because she's younger. And, you know, she's just, like, still figuring out who she is. And I guess Kate is to a degree as well. But I don't know, like, it sort of makes sense. Like, maybe it's one of those things, maybe because I've read the comics and, like, I already know Kamala's a fangirl, that this doesn't faze me the same way that it does with Hawkeye. Because, like, I remember Kate Bishop, who told off Hawkeye before she even met him, technically, to, like, not put on a Captain America costume.
It would make way more sense if she was 2 years younger in the show.
Yeah.
And this kind of attitude would be more evident. Like, okay, so she's 22 in the show. And one of the big things is that she's no longer a top child. She's an adult. And I'm like, yeah, she's 22.
And she still behaves like she's 12.
Maybe
not 12,
If this was an 18, 19-year-old, I would buy it more. But at this point, she's almost about to graduate college if she didn't get expelled for blowing up the bell tower. And there's just a lot going on.
Yeah. Anyway, so she gets embroiled into, like, some shady black market shenanigans where she finds and then puts on the Ronin suit, which introduces her to Clint, because this is, like, a very quick summary. Otherwise, we're going to be here all day. That's how she's introduced to Clint, because Clint goes after Ronan. Meanwhile, Clint is in town with his kids, all three of them, just doing Christmassy stuff and hanging out. And they go see Rogers the Musical. And the whole thing is, like, there's a couple of different storylines. There's the stuff happening with Clint and Kate, and then there's the murder of Jack's uncle, Armand. Then there's like the tracksuit mafia, which is Polish apparently.
Yeah.
But... even though not all of the words they use are Polish. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And then you have Maya, who's in charge of the tracksuit mafia, who is in the comics the character Echo. And you have Kazu, and then you have the stuff with the Kingpin. So there's like a lot. Oh, and not to forget about Yelena as well, who's here trying to kill Clint.
Yeah, we'll get to her later.
Okay. So now back to the character development question then. I think there's a lot of things that Clint has gone through. So we see the trauma of that, right? We see him with his like loss of hearing and his, you know, what do you call it? His hearing aid. We see a lot of sign language because we also have Echo, who is a character who is deaf. And this is like really well represented, I think. And then you sort of have Clint still dealing with the trauma of like losing Nat, being Ronan, losing his family and then getting it back. But we don't delve too much into the latter stuff, but there's still definite like levels of guilt about what happened to Nat and what he did while he was Ronan. But he doesn't feel like a character that really changed.
No, he kind of feels like the same guy he was in Endgame, in all honesty. Like, I genuinely think his best movie, and this is a controversial opinion, the movie has the most personality in is Age of Ultron.
Yeah. Yeah, he comes off very, like, paternal. And I think a lot of his characterization here is actually kind of reminiscent of Age of Ultron. Because he is very, like, look, Kate is, like, a kid. I say this as someone who's, like, several years older than her, that like she's a, in my mind she's a child, and it's like, yes, she's a Hawkeye fangirl, but it kind of seems like she just wants a dad because she lost her own dad, and Clint like begrudgingly at first takes on this role, and given that at the end he basically takes Kate to his house because Kate's mom is in prison now, and like she really needs like a family around her, so she basically got adopted, which like I'm kind of like, I understand for narrative purposes, but as a Kate Bishop fan, I'm not a fan of this.
Yeah, so that's actually a quality that he carried on from Age of Ultron, and one I actually enjoy because it's the same relationship as with the Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
So it's like, I like this idea of Hawkeye just adopting like orphan people who need assistance.
Oh my God, is he the MCU's Batman, but without the money?
Out of it, well, no, he's Kate Bishop, so I guess he has money now. Like, that would be amazing.
All right. But we also get quite a few different revelations in this show, right? Like, we learn a lot about Kate Bishop, but this is our introduction to, like, you know, Maya. This is our introduction to the Kingpin. This is our introduction to the Swordsman, who I guess is gonna appear with the Black Knight in some alleged project that may or may not be happening anymore.
That is going to be such a weird one, in all honesty.
Hey, I'm just psyched for the sword choreography. I'm a big sucker for a fancy choreography.
As long as they do it well. But also, this is technically a reintroduction to the Kingpin because he was in Daredevil.
Yes, but at that point, Daredevil was not, but also was, but also wasn't in the MCU.
I know, it's weird. And now Daredevil is canon, along with probably all the rest of those shows. So who knows where that will lead in the future.
If it leads anywhere, because at this point...
good question.
Hey, Marvel. So, hey, Industries. How about you resolve the writer's strike? Huh? 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 Because you can fix that. You have that power.
You do.
We just really dated this episode, but let's hope that by the, you know, that like... when people are listening to this episode a year from now, that the writer's strike will have ended.
yes. Hopefully.
And for the benefit of the writers, we should add.
We are four writers.
Yeah, so. Okay.
Yeah, no, overall, I think this show did help improve Hawkeye's characterization. I don't think it made him fascinating, but I think it made him a little bit more of a character, at least enough to watch the show.
Yeah. I don't know. I had such mixed feelings about the show because I feel like it really didn't need to have Kate Bishop in it. Like I understand why she's here in the way that they wrote the show. But my issue is like I didn't need Kate Bishop introduced in a Hawkeye series. I just needed Kate Bishop to be introduced at all, period. Right? Like Kate Bishop is not introduced in a Hawkeye comic. Hawkeye's actually dead when she's introduced in the comics, and she doesn't meet him until like after Civil War, I think.
Yeah, don't worry, he gets better.
So, no one ever dies in comics except Captain Marvel and Gwen Stacy
Uncle Ben.
and Uncle Ben. And Batman's parents, but that's DC.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, like, so when this was announced, I think I tweeted out something or posted it on Tumblr that Kate Bishop needs Hawkeye, like she needs a butt, like a fish needs a bicycle. Because like Kate, I under like the way that they framed the show, he introduces her to like trick arrows and stuff like that was fun. I hope we get to the trick arrow stuff because that was, I think, the best part of the show.
That is one of the best parts of the show. Like their, I will give it this, their relationship dynamic really developed well. This isn't comic book Kate. You have to go into this almost accepting that fact. If you wanted comic book Kate, you're not going to get her
I
in
mean,
the
at this point, I
MCU.
don't even like comic book Kate because they
Well,
ruined her. But yeah, this is a
yeah.
bit like, okay, I think I should clarify this. If you are a fan of Alan Heinberg's Kate, this is not the Kate you're going to get. If you're a fan of Matt Fraction's Kate or the Kate that came after in the Kelly Thompson, I think it was Kelly Thompson's run in West Coast Avengers, like that's the Kate that you see in the MCU. Which I have so many issues with for so many reasons, but we're talking about the MCU. We'll leave that for another episode. If you want me to riff on the way they ruined Kate Bishop, just let us know in the comments, and or tweet to us, and then we'll do an episode about that.
Absolutely.
So you are the woman with the questions today. So what you
So
got?
the other one is, does Yelena have to be in this show at all?
I mean, you actually could cut that entire storyline out without any issue, but then the after credit scene in Black Widow makes no sense and has no follow through.
To be fair, MCU does have a history of their credit scenes kind of being dropped off the planet until way, way later. Like, how long did it take for like the Mandarin to pay off?
Shang-Chi. Oof.
Exactly. So to kind of get into it, Elena's role is that she was hired by Kate Bishop's mom, whose name is eluding me right now,
Eleanor.
thank you, to kill Clint Barton. She's also angry at him because she believes that he killed Natasha, which we all know what literally
Just to clarify,
happened.
it's Yelena that's angry at Clint because she
Yes.
thinks he killed Natasha, not Eleanor. Do they ever explain why Eleanor was wanting him dead?
No.
I guess it's sort of implied that he was getting too close to the tracksuit mafia and Kingpin stuff, maybe?
I guess. But again, they didn't know he was Ronin.
True, but they did know that Clint was sniffing around. And Maya reports to the Kingpin. Huh.
Yeah. So Yelena kind of shows up as she's again a phenomenal character. She's one of the highlights of the show.
She's a delight.
She's amazing. She also doesn't need to be here because she basically serves as a clue dispensing device.
Yeah. I did appreciate this like weird dynamic that I don't really know how to characterize between her and Kate, especially when like during that whole macaroni and cheese exchange. And
That
then
went
during
on way too long.
it dragged just a little bit, but it was still really funny. I think if they had like maybe punched up the dialogue a little bit, it would have been more interesting, but I guess they needed to make a little bit more space for Yelena to enjoy the macaroni and cheese.
Absolutely. But so, like, her, the big payoff between all of this and her is like her and Clint having that conversation about Natasha and what it all means. And all of that. But in terms of the actual like plot of the story, she doesn't need to be here. And it'd probably be more powerful, in fact, if Kate was the one who by herself through like solving the actual mystery, figured out that her mom was working with Kingpin.
Yeah, because Yelena just like texts her like, oh, by the way, BFF, I found out who hired me. It was your mom. Bye.
Bye.
I do also like the exchange between them in the last episode when they're fighting and she like Kate does some move and they pause for a second. Yelena's like, that was very good. Like, this is adorable bonding. Like,
yeah, because I think what they're trying to do is develop a sibling relationship between the two of them.
To mirror Natasha and Yelena. I really like that. I like that idea.
I absolutely do too. I just wish she had more of a role in the overall show. Like, if we're going to take this, I wish she showed up earlier, frankly, and had a bigger part to play in all of this.
Well, I guess we kind of have to think about what the ultimate point of the show is, because you could have reframed the entire show to be just about Yelena trying to kill Clint for 6 episodes. And like, there's probably ways you could have weaved in Kate through that. Could have had something about Clint going back to the circus. But
we are never getting Circus Clint. I want Circus Clint. We're not getting Circus Clint.
Yeah, we're not. So I think if in that case, they're trying to continue the threads that were set up from Captain America and Winter Soldier, or Falcon and Winter Soldier, Captain America and Winter Soldier, to Black Widow, now to Hawkeye, which is continuing the whole thing about what's her name, Evangeline, and the, which I guess is now we know is setting up a Thunderbolts thing. I think Hawkeye here, the series is trying to do two things. Number one, I think its purpose was to kind of retire Hawkeye for like for realsies this time. And kind of the passing of the arrow and the bow. But it's also introducing us to Maya and the big bad, which is Kingpin, who has been absent from the MCU, but from like the main MCU, but now with TV shows and everything's been combined.
Yeah, and that leads to one of my other questions. So what did you think about the reveal that Kingpin was the big villain this entire time? Did it work?
Figured it out at episode 2, not gonna lie.
I mean, yeah, it kind of leads through that. But what do we think about now Kingpin's kind of role in the MCU? What does this mean for the Daredevil show? And like, would you have picked a different like kind of end villain for this?
I don't know if I would have picked a different villain, but I feel like this, we didn't really, how do I put this? This feels kind of small potatoes for the Kingpin. Like, I understand they did this whole thing where like he and Maya's dad were friends and all that jazz, but they didn't really, I feel like they could have done a little bit more to establish who the Kingpin is in this space, other than like, oh, he's a big, scary bad guy behind the curtain. Like, yes, but the Kingpin is so much more than that. Like,
yeah.
This is a guy that has his hand in literally every pie, legal and illegal, and just grossly immoral.
And I guess the question is, what did Eleanor Bishop actually do for him?
So from what I understood from the last episode, because I rewatched it literally like 2 hours ago, is that when Derek Bishop died, he was in debt and he was in debt to the Kingpin.
Yeah.
And so Eleanor was essentially forced to take over the debt and the role that Derek, whatever it was doing. It's really yes. So from what we know in terms of the Tracksuit Mafia and all of this is we know that the Kingpin basically ordered Eleanor to kill Armand, Jack's uncle.
We don't know why, though.
Yeah. So there's a lot of threads that are a little bit unclear, yes, Kingpin is made to look like this, like a lot of people complained when the Kingpin was included in this, especially after the last episode, because they're like, oh, he's so weak, Kate shouldn't have been able to defeat him. Like, Kate technically didn't defeat him. Kate's only success here was in fact that there were enough trick arrows on the floor to cause damage, and even then he walked off fine And then the last shot of the related to him is Maya actually shooting him, which probably didn't do much. Maybe knocked him out for a few minutes. I will admit, though, that the Kingpin isn't as terrifying as he was in the Daredevil series.
I think that's in part because he's allowed to be that terrifying in the Daredevil series. The
Yeah, for
Daredevil
sure.
series has a different rating. It has a different tone. You can't carry that into a PG-13 Disney Plus show. I wish they could.
I feel
It made
like
it.
I feel like they could have balanced it out a little bit more, but you know, maybe it's one of those things like we don't have the whole story yet because the MCU is just a bunch of different threads coming together into this multiverse or universe thing. So, you know, I'm sure Daredevil Born Again will see a little bit more of the Kingpin.
Yeah, I
But
mean, honestly, I thought he was a good villain for the wrap up. I wish we got more in depth as to who he is as a character and how big his enterprise really is. Because right now it just seems like he's running this small time gang who lives in a old toy warehouse, and we don't even really know what their operations are.
I wonder if part of it is the blip, because there's two things that could have happened. Number one, the Kingpin did not get blipped and therefore accumulates more wealth and power in the course of, you know, taking advantage of a serious situation because he 10-10 would. Or Kingpin was blipped, and as a result of the 5-year gap, his operations and his system has significantly weakened or been taken over by other people. So he's actually rebuilding his empire, which
unfortunately the show doesn't tell us.
We just kind of have to fill in the gaps with our own headcanons, folks.
Exactly. So that kind of gets into one of the other questions is, overall, what part, like, how do you think the Hawkeye show will play into the MCU overall?
Oh, do I have to answer this question?
Yes.
Okay, so Clint's going to retire if he's not retired yet. Kate obviously becomes the new Hawkeye. The Kingpin is going to reappear in Daredevil Born Again. And what else I got? Jack, I already said earlier, is going to show up with the sword with the Black Knight in some weird adventure thingy that TBD. And Kate is going to, based off some rumors about the after credit scene in the Marvels, we're not, you know, Kate's going to be out there recruiting young heroes for what? Survey says, rumor has it, there's like plans for some weird children's crusade movie, which I don't know what that has to do with literally anybody except the core young Avengers, where Billy's going to go on a mission to find Tommy.
And do we think that the Rolex will pay off?
Yeah, no.
No.
To clarify for context here, so Hawkeye's wife, Layla, is that her name?
Her name doesn't matter.
Well, we should refer to her by her name. I'm going to look it up, but we do know that she's revealed to be the MCU's Mockingbird, which I guess nullifies Bobby from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. went so far off canon, it doesn't really matter. I'm sorry to fans of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I don't care.
We will get to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. another day.
You and Mike have fun with that.
All right.
But I like the fact that we do get to see a little bit more of her. We really haven't seen much from her. And since like Age of Ultron, we do get a little bit of her in the last scene in Infinity War. But it was cool that they sort of established that she's not just like a stay-at-home mom on a farm, that like she was like they had to have met somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because like in Age of Ultron, when we meet her, she's like very down to earth, very chill. That I'm like how did these two meet, let alone build a family together, if like this is how she is? And the reveal that she was actually an agent does make sense, but it's not, there's no place for it to go.
Yeah, I don't know where that thread is going to lead at all. Personally, like Hawkeye, like every other movie and thing at this point in the MCU, is just a jumping off point for the Young Avengers, as the movies and TV shows are just slowly collecting children. For what purpose, I do not know.
And not for the better, FYI. But to clarify, okay, so Lila is the daughter. Laura Barton is the wife, played by Linda Cardellini. And, you know, I will also say that, like, Linda Cardellini and Jeremy Renner did have decent chemistry that, like, I can believe that they are married and he leaves for work all the time and, like, it's believable.
Oh, yeah, no, I also love his kids. Like, his entire family's great. I wish they were in more of it, frankly.
I am really shocked that they even introduced Kate Bishop in the first place because they easily didn't have to. Lila is right there. And we all know the MCU loves combining two different characters into one. Hello, Bucky Barnes and Arnie Roth. So, like, why not just make Lila Hawkeye? Like,
they were kind of leading up to it in Endgame, where he was training, I think it was Endgame, where he was training her in archery.
It was either, I think it was Infinity War, actually. It was right before they blipped, right?
Did that happen in Infinity War, or was that the very beginning of Endgame?
Maybe it was. I don't remember, but you're right. Yeah, there was a scene somewhere in and around that time of him training her that I was like, oh, they're just going to make... Like, Marvel's, like, obsessed with legacy characters, so I don't get why Clint's children are off limits.
Maybe we should be grateful that they are, and we're not going to have the three of them join the gaggle of children superheroes.
I mean, I'd rather have them than some of the other kids we've been introduced to.
That is...
Because A, they're not, like, deus ex machina overpowered children. Thor, Love, and Thunder. You know, like, the rest of the Asgardian kids were cool. You know, but, like, baby T'Challa is still, like, what, like, 6? Maybe 10? Right? Like, I think it's cool what they did with that, but, like, it's not gonna go anywhere for a while. And don't get me started on the after credit scene in Guardians of the Galaxy 3, because I'm still mad about that.
It's such a phenomenal movie, that end credit scene. Anyway, because Hawkeye really is such a bingeable show, I have a hard time differentiating when one episode ends and one episode begins.
Yeah.
So instead of asking what the best episode is, what were some of the best moments, we think, in the show?
I mean, we've already talked about some of them. You know, I think Yelena, although we mentioned Yelena's kind of like her role could easily be cut. What she does bring is really fun. I think all of the fight choreography is really, really fun. I think after like Guardians and Spider-Man and all these other films I've watched, it's nice to see like good old fashioned hand to hand combat. So that's been really cool. I also love the fact that we get to see a lot of different kinds of fighting techniques, right? We get to see Maya, who fights differently from Clinton Cade, who fights differently from the Tracksuit Mafia. And then we get Jack and the sword. Like, that was cool at the end. Even though he was an interesting character, I will give them that. And I will say there isn't, the only, like, all of these characters do have personalities and unique identities that they don't feel flat. So that is actually really important.
Oh, yeah. Like, one of my favorite moments, though, are actually some of the quieter ones. Like, I think my favorite scene in this entire show is when Clint Barton's hearing aid gets broken, and he gets a call from his youngest son, Nathaniel, and Kate is there, and she's writing what Nathaniel's saying on the notepad, and he tells Clint, it's okay that you can't be home for Christmas. And it is like, this is why they set this in Christmas, because they wanted that artificial deadline thing.
Yeah. I did enjoy Clint's, like, face during that entire Rogers the Musical scene in the first episode.
I love Rogers. I would watch Rogers the Musical in real life. It'd be amazing. And it's like, Jeremy Renner can actually act if you give him the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I like it. Like, it's just so funny to see, like, because we have to remember that we very rarely get what the rest of the universe thinks about superheroes. Everything is sort of zoomed in. It's nice to see how the rest of the world works and how their perceptions of superheroes are shaped. It's also hilarious that Ant-Man is included in the Chitauri scene of the musical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is because of Endgame.
I also like to think that they're flashing back to the original comic where he did help defeat Loki with ants, but I highly doubt that's what they're going for.
Yeah, I doubt it. I did also appreciate there's a scene where Kate is talking about Hawkeye's branding, and she suggests a costume change, and the costume she draws is actually like a version of the actual costume he wears in the comics, and she's like, and it needs to be purple.
That was like one of the best jokes in the entire thing. It's like, one, I don't wear this because my wife would divorce me if I put anything like this on. And it's like, Hawkeye's actually funny in this. And it's lovely and refreshing.
He gets a lot of good, like, deadpan humor in this.
I wish we saw the rest of the MCU movies because we needed it.
Also, I love the LARPers.
Oh, I love the LARPers. I am so happy they were included.
I honestly expected them to be like one-offs, but they carried through the rest of the series in a really great way. Even that, like, this is where it like hinted at another MCU Marvel character, Bombshell, who's I think she started as a Spider-Man villain or something.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. But then, like, you have these ordinary people that are in, like, civil servant jobs who want to help a superhero and do the right thing, even though technically some of the things that they did are very illegal.
Yeah.
But then again, so is basically everything Clint did in this show and, like, the rest of the MCU, so.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's a superhero show. Everything they do is illegal. Or some such nonsense.
Definitely. So what were your favorite moments?
I don't know. It's like the softer scene where Kate Bishop draws the original comic book costume, and it's hilarious. Her with the notepad and Clint. I love Clint's conversations with his wife. I think those are super cute. Rogers the Musical. Amazing. And then anytime he interacts with his kids, I think is really, really nice.
He does really give off. Huh?
It does so much to actually create a character around him. And it's not just this weird cardboard family that got introduced in Ultron for reasons because they didn't honestly want to ship him and Natasha.
Which is fine with me, but also, like, anyway. I also really like just like the dad energy that he has.
Oh yeah.
There's like that scene where he's putting the kids back in the car so they can go to so they can go home and he can deal with whatever. And Lila's like, so he puts the oldest son in charge, and Lila's like, you're putting him in charge? He's an idiot. And he's like, well, we all know who's really in charge here. And like, yeah, it's always the girl. So it was really sweet. And he like it's nice. I like also before we get to the scene with the notepad, there's that whole segment of like Kate and Clint mm-hmm. not being able to hear each other, or correction, Clint not being able to hear her, so they can't really communicate. And like she says something, and then he repeats like the same thing she said like a minute later, and it's like, oh, how? And she's like, we're communicating. But I love the trick arrows. That was fun. Oh.
Yes, I think one of the best action scenes in this entire show was when Clint is driving the car backwards and they're firing the trick arrows out of the car. Like, perfect. This is what I wanted out of this show.
No, it was fun. Especially the scene on the bridge where Clint's like, shoot the arrow! And she shoots the arrow, and then Clint shoots a Pym arrow. I'm like, I know where this is going!
Oh, yeah. And it's just like, and the fact that he can create them himself is such good characterization. Because the question is, where did he get all these trick arrows from? Oh, he is actually a smart enough person to make them himself.
I also liked Kate complaining in the second or third episode when they're doing the car chase that, like, you should label these. And then at the end, when they're making the arrows, she is actually printing labels out from a label maker.
That entire scene is so funny because she mentions that she can't drive. And it's like, yeah, of course, she's from New York. Of course she wouldn't drive.
It's true.
And then, like, Kate has some good moments here and there. I like her relationship with her mom a bit. I could see where the mom is coming from in a lot of the things, but at the same time, it's like, and this leads to another thing, why does everyone in the MCU have to have at least one dead parent?
Because they're owned by Disney.
That, okay, yes, sure.
Hey,
Can we?
at least she has a parent. Some people don't have either. Don't
I
even have
mean,
one, right? Right? Tony Stark's both of his parents were killed, remember?
it's easier to list the characters who do actually have two parents.
Like who?
Technically, Hawkeye's kids.
Ah, that's fair. That's fair. They're like the only ones.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, it would have been interesting to kind of have her have two parents, but if you go back to her comic book origins, I believe it's actually her mom who's killed and not her dad. So,
Well, about that.
well, no one dies in comics.
Well, it's not even that. So her mom was considered dead in the original Young Avengers series, and she had her dad and she had an older sister. And then it turned out her mom was alive and was a vampire queen or some such nonsense. And I just went, no, thank you.
Well, I'm glad I didn't know that until now.
I mean, we're getting Blade. Who knows what could happen? But yeah, I'd rather not see that. But that's just because I'm vampire intolerant. It's
Okay,
an
so
allergy.
let's hope we don't see that in Blade. Otherwise, that would be really interesting.
Yeah, so I don't know. This film is really more about retiring Hawkeye and establishing Kate as his protege and, whatever, and setting up for a future of some kind of weird. So initially, before the rumors of a Children's Crusade film, I really thought that what they were going to do is kind of what they did in Endgame and with Infinity War, whereas like in one of the big Kang movies, like Kang will take away all of the adult superheroes and take them to like the Secret Wars movie. And so then you actually have all of these children set up as like, oh, all of the heroes are gone. So we're going to have to take up this mantle and kick butt and protect the city or whatever, or the country.
Well, yeah, but we'll see what happens. And in the meantime, I think they're slowly building to Kate definitely being in a Young Avengers type of formation. I think her being one of the oldest people in that kind of category, she might end up leading the group.
Which she
Is
does
that?
lead the Young Avengers for a bit, in Children's Crusade, the comic. So it's possible. What I
To lead
found,
the West Coast Avengers at some point.
yeah, we don't need to talk about that
Okay.
because then we get very, very angry Sasha wondering why the girl that told Captain America very politely to leave them the heck alone because they screwed everything up, to Kate being terrified to take a call from Captain America.
Let's not talk about that.
Anyway, there's one other point I wanted to make, which is that, oh, I remember when the series came out and everybody, all of these MCU stans, I can't with them. They're like, oh, Yelena's gonna be a young Avenger. I'm like, no, she's
She's like
not.
30 or older.
Like, just because y'all love Yelena and Yelena deserves some love. Like, she's a great character. She's really, really fun. But no, like, in a world that makes sense, this is not it. Like, Young Avengers doesn't just mean a younger person.
Nope, it does not. So I guess this kind of leads into my last question. What were your overall thoughts and impressions of the show? Did you like it? What's kind of your feelings on it?
I enjoyed it when it came out. I thought it was a lot of fun. Rewatching it though felt a little bit like a drag. And I don't really know why, because there's n because well, maybe it's because some of the pacing is a little bit weird. I think Kate really frustrated me, and even separating the fact that this is not Alan Heinberg's version of Kate, she just was very annoying. And she does get better, but she started off very unlikable in so many ways, very immature.
And that's part of her character growth through the show, that she becomes more mature, accepts the responsibility of what it actually means to be a superhero. And that's, I think, one of the reoccurring themes of the show. The other one's revenge.
And consequences.
And the consequences of revenge. But my overall impression of this is, I watched it the first time, I enjoyed it, and then I watched it the second time, and I realized I forgot 99% of the show. It to me, it's enjoyable, but it leaves no, like, impact whatsoever. It's the definition of, like, just popcorn. I will enjoy watching it, and then we'll never watch it again, and completely forget everything that happens.
That's a really good point. I think rewatching it a second time, I picked up maybe on a few things I didn't quite catch in the first one, or maybe was re-finding the things I caught the first time. But I don't know. There were scenes that I think were more memorable than others, but I genuinely forgot about the entire exchange between, like, Clint and Yelena about Natasha. I think you're right. There is a lot that is just forgettable.
There's so many good moments in this show, and I will give it that. But at the same time, it, like, there is no, I'm not going to say wait, because I feel like that's the wrong word, but it doesn't, like, you're not going to remember this show
impact.
Once you're done watching. Yes, impact. This isn't any of the Guardians movies. This isn't really, I would say, the second Cap movie. This isn't probably Iron Man 1, where it has that impact that you will remember. This is as many good moments as there is, and there is a decent plot here, I would say. Though, again, Yelena being the clue dispenser kind of ruins that a little bit. It's not a show that carries any weight or impact. I'm going to go, like, probably in the next 3 days, I want to completely forget everything I just watched.
Yeah. I got nothing else to add. That's pretty much the take.
Yeah, so, like, I can't say I didn't enjoy it while watching it. It's not like it was a complete slog for me. Like, I had fun watching it, but it's like, again, it's good popcorn.
Yeah, it's like if I want, like, something actiony that I don't really have to think too hard about, like, I'll put this on. But doesn't leave the same impact as, like, say, Falcon and Winter Soldier? Not really.
I mean, it's not even a movie. Unfortunately, this is also not a show you can put on the background. I mean, you kind of can, but they have so many good scenes of sign language. But if you did that, you might be missing a good chunk of the representation.
Yeah, I actually had that problem because I am the kind of person that does, like, five things at once when I watch something. And then I'm like, huh, it's just been straight up music for a minute. That seems weird. And then I looked up and I was like, oh, wait, I just missed an entire exchange between Maya and her dad. So I had to rewind it to make sure I got the scene. We didn't talk about Echo.
That's because Echo just really ties into, like, one of the two themes of the show, and that is revenge and its consequences. So Echo is, I think, introduced in episode 2 or 3, I think episode 2. And her basic thing is that she watched Ronin.
Allegedly
watched Ronin kill her dad in front of her. So she's been kind of on this revenge quest. And that is why Clint essentially can't go home for Christmas, is because he's worried that she will hunt him and his family down. And he can't have that for obvious reasons.
And it is demonstrated very well that Maya is very determined.
She's also very good at what she does. Like, she's a very good at kind of running the tracksuit gang. She's a very competent fighter and has a lot of good qualities. But she eventually figures out that one of her own men, her deputy, betrayed her. And that was what resulted in her father's death.
Well, what happened was Kazu was her dad's lieutenant. And Kazu thought that if, I think Kingpin ordered it, but Kazu carried it out and thought that, like, oh, if I do this for Kingpin, he's going to make me in charge. And then he didn't and put Maya in charge. Mm-hmm. And he's very cranky about that.
Yeah, he's an interesting character. I can't say that he's bad. Again, it's just like he leaves no impact. I think some of the scenes where, like, one of the good scenes is where Hawkeye's in the back of his car and they just have this entire conversation. And you can just see, like, the problem is that Hawkeye and Quint kind of outclasses almost everybody in this show, except maybe Yelena.
Oh, definitely except Yelena. Yelena was ready to murder him, and she was kicking his butt.
Yeah, well, I don't know if that's because Quint didn't want to fight her, and he was kind of letting her do it because of his own guilt around Natasha's death.
Maybe a little bit, but not enough to risk his life.
Yeah.
So, like, he was trying to stop her and was, like, trying, like, look, I don't want to fight you. But at the end of the day, he still had to defend himself. And we know that, like, Yelena is, I would argue, even better as a fighter than Natasha was.
Well, I mean, if you go back all the way to kind of Avengers 1, we know Hawkeye can hold his own against Natasha, like, fairly competently. So I think Yelena is actually a little bit more skilled than Natasha was. And it's a very good fight scene, and it's a very good scene overall.
Definitely.
But again, it's not like something that's going to hit me like 2 weeks later down the line.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what. So it seems like a lot of things are sort of happening in the MCU so far at the same time. Which in some ways is a good thing because it makes it easier to slow down the passage of time. But does make it a little bit, I think, difficult for other things. But we'll see how all of this plays out. We won't see Yelena until Thunderbolts. We won't see Kate until maybe the Marvels after credit scene, as rumors suggest. I don't know.
Who knows when we'll see Echo and Kingpin? And
oh, well, Echo has her own Marvels series coming up. When that's released, keeps changing, but it is coming.
Right, like the original Eternals, not Eternals, Inhumans movie.
Well, no, that's different. Echo was at least filmed. So we know for a fact that Echo, the show, is coming. It finished filming. It will probably tie into Daredevil. And yeah, so, you know, Hawkeye's a fun series to watch when you sit down to watch it, but you won't really remember it a week from now.
No, I mean, I give it the stamp of recommended if you just want to kill kind of an afternoon.
Yeah, I think that's a good attitude to keep. So on that note, Caitlin, are you on social media?
No, not really. I am a ghost in the system.
All right. Well, in that case, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Geeky Kaplan. That is Kaplan with a K after the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe, Billy Kaplan. Please, please, please tweet at me different ways that I can force Caitlin to get some kind of social media presence because...
Never.
Well, this podcast needs to grow, and I can't be the only one doing it.
Fine, I will consider it.
We do have a Nerdy Notions Twitter that somebody was allegedly going to run.
Yes, I will get that set up.
But it's anyway, set up! You just have to tweet!
What are we reviewing next?
What's next on the list? Shang-Chi. Did we review Eternals?
No.
So Eternals or Shang-Chi? Find out next time on Nerdy Notions.
Please vote for Shang-Chi. I cannot watch Eternals again.
You're going to have to watch it eventually. It's just a matter of if you watch... I mean, yes, I think Eternals came out first, right?
Yeah.
If we're going by theatrical release order, then we do have to watch the Eternals first. It doesn't really matter which one we watch first because they don't carry into each other in any way.
No.
But just understand that this is what you're going to have to do it regardless.
Ugh. fine.
But on that depressing note, join us next time as Sasha and Caitlin, as Caitlin and I torture ourselves with the Eternals. Or maybe we'll decide to save ourselves a little bit and do a review of Shang-Chi instead. Until next time.